Unmuted. Okay. So we're holding over here in middle of the big Pisgah over here. And we saw the Hoven Ischak Maloi, Melachodesh, the Schach Yosef, Hoven Ischak Maloi, and then Vayosimolov. So let's take a look in the piece over here in the Maral. Vayosimolov, sorry, Missim. So it's on page Mem Hey in the standard Maral editions. Vayosimolov, sorry, Missim. Gam kein dik kan dik de kube milas olav. So the mice like this. Let's see the piece inside. The Chazal Darshan over here that it's in the middle of Lamed. It's in the middle of the piece Lamed Gimel. Vayasimu olav sorry misim aleim. Vayasimu olav sorry misim aleim iboyle. They should have said aleim. Toner Rabbi Elazar Shimon Oimer. Malamid sheviu malbein v'toler par b'tzavori v'kol echon misol shemlem isis ani oimalei klum isis ati esim ipari. So lemaisa they had they hung a brick around paroi, and anyone who complained that you know he's too refined to do this work, so b'meila they told him are you know more refined than paroi, and that's how they got them to work. So Maral says over here, "Vayisimol sorry misim gam ken kan dikteku b'milas olav in the fash oisa la'am nike b'chol mokem shekos b'milas olav b'bolemait." So like he said over here, oisa in before when he spoke about wherever it says loy, it's coming to be memayet others. So here also when it says olav, there's some sort of k'nature of miyut. V'ene k'mo shalosh sheyochik k'mo shemana l'mala. Lachain loy tochen fash oisum al kala om shein kan miut. Lachain dor shall parish a tolam al matzavor shall parry. Cholechat sham isani oimale klumat isnes yosimi parry. Now, so this is where Chazal darshan that parry did it himself, and the olav's going on parry. Begam zen nira. Shein roitz leime kibi asim olav pirusha al parry. So the Maral says it doesn't mean literally that it's on paro. In other words, the story that Chazal are telling you over here doesn't mean kipshutai. Ukvamanu lemala kamelach hamoylech oisa ha'om kish echod ki kulam tui bemela. Upirz asimolav sha'al kol ha'om ki echod somnei usor misim. Ki gam hamelach hamachra amhoi misayev bebinyin uipnei zeh kulam mishavar ki echod. So what Chazal are trying to say is that this was not a pa'ula of many people taking advantage of many people. It was something as if the Ummah as an Ummah did bad. So what's the pasuk telling you? Ki kol davar she'asim mitzrim liyisrael hoye b'inyan klali she'mishavnes yisrael bichlal b'fam echad. So anything that they were doing happened in one shot. In other words, it was as if the entire, it's not a process. Normally, when you have some sort of social process where many people are taking advantage of the newcomers and so on, so it's yechidim, and we look at it, we can see a sort of, many items or elements and so on. But over here, it started with almost as if an umma to an umma. V'zein sofik shu yoysim ashe yashibut shem shavz kach dof ni atzmoy, ki mipnei shu yashibut kloli, moirizal shu nigzar aleyem mitzah klolu sehem, v'gzeres aloikis. It's not that individual people were choytim, but rather there was a klolistic gzeira, lekach ba gzera klosem ke echot. Shadvorim hamikrim protim heim, ve'inyan mitzrayim lo yimikri rak zera loikis ol kachay lakal lo elaprat. So let's discuss the point over here. You find many times in Navi Lamashal, Kasa did Averis, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Ammon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Moab, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Edom, and all sorts of nations to make life miserable for them, hopefully they'll do tshuva, they'll turn around, and so on. So the averis are usually seen as the result of each yachid. In other words, Klal Yisrael, Yisrael apishachot Yisrael, who means that the central nekud of a person that makes him Yisrael is above chait. That nekuda never ever is part of chait, but rather the personal weaknesses of each person is the chet. There's a famous, I think Tolstoy is the one who wrote, pretty much, yeah, that all happy families are alike, are happily alike. All unhappy families, each one is unhappy in its own way. In other words, Klal Yisrael as a klal is Kodesh Torah, above, beyond, and so on. The averis that happened because of weaknesses, but those weaknesses, each weakness is limited to the person who bears that weakness. And even if many, many people bear that weakness, they're not a tzibur b'teiras that. This is the inyan that you mitzarev chalbana, you know, that when you have 10 people, you can be mitzarev a choyte, because in as much as the choyte is part of a klal, he's not a choyte. His chatoyim are personal issues. They're not the issues of the klal. So when we have a klal, a balaver can also be mitzarev to the klal. That's the over there. The big exception was Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. And let's understand a little bit about the process of it. Klal Yisrael was not yet a nation. There was Shivim Nefesh that went down to Mitzrayim. And those Shivim Nefesh did not yet have a Shem Klal. The big obstacle, in other words, if we're to ask ourselves, what's the make it or break it of those Ayin Nefesh? The answer is they will either remain Ayin Nefesh, they can become Shvamot Nefesh, they can become Shvat Alvim Nefesh, they can become Shvamot Elef Nefesh. But all it is a lot of people, or will it become an Ummah? Will it become Ayyim Azen Yesel Am or not? Now, the Nisayon of Mitzrayim was exactly that. Klal Yisrael was called Goy Bekerev Goy. Klal Yisrael was a nation within a nation. So just like as long as a fetus is in its mother's womb, but Halacha will treat it as Ube Yerachimo, will treat it as just another part of it. So these Yechidim, the Nisoyan was that they were totally absorbed by Mitzrayim. So it was Mitzrayim as a nation absorbing them, enslaving them, because the real struggle was nation to nation. Mitzrayim was an empire of sorts. Mitzrayim was, its nature was, it had incorporated in itself and absorbed in itself many families. Klal Yisrael, Yaakov Abanov, went into Mitzrayim, and mitzad Mitzrayim, enslaving them was the way in which they would make them part of Mitzrayim. So more than harming a particular yochid, the one thing Mitzrayim didn't want is that they become a nation. And that's why the back and forth between Moshe Rabbeinu and Pari was, can we go as a people? Can we go as a group and bring karbanis? Can we go as a group, men and women and children? The point was, if the fetus, as long as the fetus is in the mother, it's part of the mother, and it's part of its internal systems. So Klal Yisrael becoming an Ummah depended, if they would have gone into Memtas Sharon Nun of Tuma, they would never have become their own Ummah. The fetus would have been aborted, and that's the end of it. So the Gzeiris were not a Gzeira, people taking advantage of people. They weren't, it wasn't, so Lamar, let's give an example. you've had pogroms over the Jewish history where people wanted to either let out their anger, frustrations on the Jews, take their money, whatever it took to so it had nothing to do with the nation as a nation. These were people, and you know, to take advantage of these people. Hitler was somebody who was set out to eradicate Shem Yisrael. It wasn't the particular people, it was Shem Yisrael. So here, Mitzrayim versus that, and therefore the Gzera was a Gzera of Paro, and Paro himself, Chazal described it as Paro being the one using his own personage to create that Gzera and so on. And he says over here, Shadvarim, now here's another thing, Shadvarim amikrim protim heim, ve'im etzayin lemikir akzer aloikis, olkachay lakal alprat. And I've said it a few times before, the Maral uses the word mikra a little differently than we use it. We use the word mikra, ke'ilu without a Kadosh Baruch in the picture, versus bashkacha. That's not the way the Maral uses it, because the Maral has a very small list of things that are not b'mikra. Dvarim g'doylem ena b'mikra, dvarim malachim ena b'mikra, and here it says another thing, klolem ena b'mikra. Mikra is something that is incidental rather than essential. When you have something which goes to the heart of something, so the mashal, this table has a surface that can hold on it pen and paper, that's essential. That's what a table does. A table holds pen and paper. This table is brown. It's a true statement, but it happens to be brown. It's not something that goes to the core of what the table is. So anytime things happen in Prat, and that's why, for instance, let's take an example at in our modern understanding of how to judge information, when you do a study on something, so you try to formulate a klal, and a klal means that it will have to, it's something that goes to the heart of it. So when I take a small sample, one of the problems, if a sample is sufficiently small, it could be true, but it's seen as something that's incidental, not part of Metzias. So Lemushel, let's say one person ate a tangerine and he turned yellow. So so eating a tangerine has caused someone to become yellow, but is this an inherent property of people and tangerines? Or is this something that's one person happens to have a gene that makes him yellow with tangerine, or one tangerine happens to have a strong dye, whatever it is. That's how we separate klal and prat, is a difference between mitzias, and that's why the bigger a sample we have, the bigger group we have, and we try to eliminate any particularities that this group might be a prat, even though it's 1,000 pieces, rather than a klal. I remember once there was in the Cheder Miyun in Hadassah, so a doctor was in the emergency room one night, and the usual is, I'll pick a number, they would get three patients with kidney stones acting up a night. There were 15 patients, and the resident was going out of his mind trying to figure out, like, these things are not usually epidemics and so on. And finally he noticed they all happened to look very frum. And he asked one of them, what yontiv is it? So he said, actually, it's a fast day. It's some Gedalia or Tzarbet Heves, whatever it is. So obviously people didn't drink, and this is where they were. But klal and prat is something where goes, it's a whole different world. It's not just a handy rule for remembering. We're describing something else when we're talking about prat and talking about klal. I want to, in the Mishnah, so you find sometimes the Mishnah says zeh klal. So the Gemara has a klal that every time you say zeh klal, it's coming to be marba memai, it's something else. There's got to be another case. It can't be that the Mishnah has exhausted all possible cases. The zeha klal that's given is not for kind of, you know, efficient learning for shortcut. It's and the point is, once I say zeha klal, it means any other prat will fit into this. It's part of what a klal is. A klal is not just a handy device. It's just like the moshul I used to have. I'm not a bucky about every month it has R. You can eat oysters or something like that. It has nothing to do with having an R. It's just mikra. But here the pshat is you're touching on something that goes to the essence of something. And therefore, the gzera came from the klal to the klal. We're talking about something in the mechus of Mitzrayim. And in Mitzrayim's ra was to not allow Klal Yisrael to become Klal Yisrael. So it's as if the Klal of Mitzrayim was totally swallowing up the prat, the potential Klal of Yisrael, and vice versa. Getting out was the opposite of it, and that's why the transition. It's kigoy mikarev goy. The Chazal give a marshal of an Uber inside a mother having a hard time getting out. So it's not just a medical issue. It's will it become its own entity or not? That's the issue. And therefore, when a midwife is moiled something, it takes something out of its previous metzias and gives it a metzias. Okay, the next piece over here. So it says, "Lemana noisa b'sivlos." By the way, there's a piece before the Maral doesn't say anything about it. But I just say over. It's a very famous piece that people say, and I've heard this word b'shem dozens of people. It's very possibly all said. It's not a theory. It says in the two pieces before in the same Lamed Gimel, but just the Amar Chia Ba'aba. So says three people were in that Eitza and Bilam Iyav Yisrael. So Bilam is a really bad guy and he got killed. Get that. That's that we understand. Yisrael was a good person and he was Barach and Bemela. He was zeicha that he shavs atzchar, also good. Iyav shashasak is kind of a neutral person, so it says nida miyisurim. Why? Well, I mean, he should neither have schar nor an einish. What's the miyisurim? So the Velt says, and again, they say it over from 100 people. In Yiddish, they say as a tutve shaitman. In other words, what was Iyav's taina? Iyav's taina was, you know, there's nothing I can do. I see that Yisrael had to run away. His life was in danger. So I can't do anything and I can't say anything. I might as well keep quiet. So they showed him that it's true also about Yisurim. When a person hurts, so there's not really, screaming is not helping much. And yet people scream. It's sometimes when a person, a person doesn't show any type of emotion, so you can say he's such a moyach sholet alev that you know he realizes and recognizes there's nothing that can be done. So that's a godless. Or he's apathetic. It doesn't really bother him much. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Yisurim. And when he screamed from Yisurim, the message was, had you felt it, you would have screamed. This stoic type of, well, there's not much we can do, is something which is not genuine. It's not because you feel so terrible and you're overcoming it, but rather it's because you don't feel anything. That's very famous Vartan. I've heard it used in every context in Yisrael about demonstrations, this, that, the other thing. But Akapanim, I just want to share it. Okay, let's go back to where we're holding. Lemana noisa b'siv loisa. Vayavin are miskin, sorry, Vayavin are miskinois lepari. Ravishmul Khanamashim is sacknes as Valehim. Building is a very, very dangerous profession. So, you know, having them build, especially, you just imagine those big blocks that they had to schlep up for the pyramids or whatever it was that they built, and without, you know, with everybody schlepping it, if somebody sneezes, it's not whatever happens, not a pretty sight. So it's very, very dangerous. V'chad omer shememaskenes es baleihem. It impoverishes their owners. The omer marakom is oisik bebinyan mitmaske. Anybody who's oisik in binyan building makes you poor. Okay, so by the way, Rashi says, I made a mistake. Rashi says shemisaknes es baleihem. Rashi says over here that the Mitzrim who Mitzrim who had them build it, they themselves ended drowning in the Yam. Many of them, unfortunately, don't look like that. It means literally that it's misaknes baleihem and so on. Let's take a look at the morale over here. By even our miskinos, biru chacham bazeh, hasiba shegazel nias b'nar miskas apari. So why was it that this was particularly chosen? V'om neishem sags b'alehim, v'gazel lehim shibuzeh shu sakana l'adam. V'y mischaber bazeh shibir agolam sakana. V'chein l'man d'yom ha'shah adam mitmaskein, k'adova zeh ish b'terach gadol, v'ein lo'y dova keitz v'soif, sheyochol livnois ma sheyirtzeh, the other one is it's something that keeps on going. There's no end to building. So the reason why building is a type of a type of undertaking that makes people poor is because there's no limit to it. Plowing a field, you plow the field, you plant the stuff, X amount of crops grows, you harvest it, and that's it. There's not much more you can do about it. In building, you just keep adding and changing, and you know, anyone who's ever made an addition knows exactly what it's like. And therefore, it was something that once it was decided to build, there'd be no end to it. Nimtzo dashnei mora mila goy la shibud mamora. So both of them are tell me about how harsh it was. Then the moral adds another point. For oyesh bezadova amik kabinyan hu hefech habracha ki bebracha in geda v'gvul ol kach nema bebracha uferatzda yama v'kedma ein bracha lebedaba porutz ve'ein la geda u'gvul b'zeinya bracha. Small here says another nekuda, and it goes in many ways to the point we spoke about before. And let's talk about this. The metzias. There are three levels in this world of let's call it gvulos. There is something like Brias Olam, Yesh Me'ayin, which starts from nothing and becomes everything. That's something that's unfathomable to us. It's something that it's not Shayach. It's not the Pshat, it breaks your boundaries. It starts without boundaries. So Yesh Me'ayin is no Hisyachsus to boundaries. So when we speak about the Moshe Rabbeinu Shalom, we're not talking about he's greater than, because the word greater than already implies a certain yachas. If I say Reuven is taller than Shimon, so Reuven is in the same ballpark as Shimon. It could be 1,000 times taller. But we already put him on a similar axis. And the question is, at which point does he get qualified or does he get over? The Rabbeinu Shalom is not shaykh to it. There's nothing we can measure you with. You don't fit into anything measurable. And Yesh Me'ayin is that mahalach. And therefore, we don't understand Yesh Ma'ayin, we understand it from the Yesh onwards. We have the other side, which is Gvul, and that's this world. Everything in this world fits into a certain amount, into a certain space of some kind, and that's it. The law of conservation of energy and matter, which is the basic law of the world, means if I start out with X amount of mass, I will end up with that. Today we have a chiddush, it can also end up as mass and energy. But tachlis, it's very mesuyim. It is something which is quantifiable, and therefore it always fits in those boundaries. It is permanently locked. It is finite in the most specific sense of the word. So if I start off with whatever mass of material I start off with, that stays there forever. I can change forms. I can rearrange it. I can spread out the atoms. I can condense the atoms. I can even convert some of the atoms to energy and so on. But whatever is. That's a finite metzias. There's another metzias that is neither here nor there, and it sort of bridges the two, and that's called bracha. Bracha means it's something that has a clear sheirish and yet not a clear cap. For instance, somebody once said that, what's an example of infinity? Show me something in the world that's infinite. So can you hold infinity in your hand? And the answer is yes. Take an apple and put it in your hand. The apple has seeds. Those seeds will make a tree. The tree will have apples with seeds, and those seeds will have apples with seeds, and chulu v'chulu v'chulu. So it's hard to quite picture it. It's you know, a seed is a tiny small thing, and yet the seed has no internal limit to how limited it's going to be. It's limited by the amount of earth available in the world. It's limited by the amount of sun. But its limitation is not mitzaratzmo. Theoretically, this process should go on, it can go on infinitely mitzad itself. So a bracha, the whole musig of bracha, where I plant seeds in the ground and I get a lot more than I put in. So yes, on a technical level, we can sit down and say, well, basically what happened was it absorbed nutrients from the ground and water from the ground and photosynthesized sun and chulu v'chulu. But l'maisa, that's the technical process. What's visible to the eye, what we see, what you understand, is a process of something that has no gvulas. And therefore, Meir Sha'arim, he planted and he found Meir Sha'arim. That's bracha. Bracha is where a person puts in a limited amount and gets a lot. It's true also economically. A person gets a salary, gets a fixed amount, and that's that. A person has a business. Theoretically, there's no limits to the business. So Klal Yisrael's mahus is bracha. In other words, their metzias is that they don't have an internal limit. What the mitzvah tried to do was impose on them building binyan versus planting. Is that process. When a person builds, he creates limits. He creates length, width, height, etc. The musig of a bias is a fenced-in area, an area that's mine and mine only. So the mela, it requires limiting. They once asked the Panovich Rav, Panovich, why is it that they frown upon learning Yerodea in yeshiva? Chol Yerodea in Hungarian yeshivas, this was the most important limud. And here, so he said, Kol Zman a bacha sitting yeshiva learning, he's building a building with more and more floors. Each Zman is another floor, each Mishnah is another floor. He says, your idea is the roof. Once you put on the roof, you don't add more to it. It's the psychology of it. It's the, you know, it's kind of that type of attitude. So binyan is the hefech of the process of zriya versus the process of bnia are opposite. Now, just to make something clear, it's not that it doesn't have its place. Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, needed a defined place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, it means he's nowhere. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, give me an Amal Amma, and that's what will be Masha my Shechina. So you do need a Makom, and a place to be rooted, and a place to, that you do need Makom. But the etzim process of it is that. So basically, when it said that he was, Paroi worked them in binyan, meant he tried to put them into a limiting mode. And that would be the hefek, that would be the Akira Klal Yisrael. I shtel to something. You know, whenever we speak about properties that are innate to Jews, people always speak about being smart. It's possible. It's maybe, you know, I don't think that that's the most defining characteristic. And also, when you want to speak about anti-Semitism, what's the defining characteristic of a Jew that grates on people's nerves? So I think like this. Restlessness. Somebody once told me in Eshet Torah, his father owned a factory in Canada. Obviously quite well-to-do, and you know, whatever. I was schmoozing him once, and he said his father has a policy, he doesn't hire any Jews. So I was kind of shocked. I knew his father was a traditional person of some sort. He said, it's very simple. He said, a non-Jew, if you treat him like a mensch, and you give him a decent salary, he will work until the day he retires and retire. He said, a Jew is sitting from the minute he's there trying to figure out how he can do it better than you. And within a half a year to a year, he's opening his own business and competing. If you hear the anti-Semitic things, it's like they're pushy. Jews are pushy. You know, you have $100 million. Why do you need more? Why do you want more? Why are you trying to buy this? Why are you trying this? So true, when the direction that it's taking is not in the world where it should be unlimited, then certainly it's bad. Jews were on the forefront of social justice, whether it's communism, socialism, Zionism, all these movements. And it was because they could see another Metzias beyond the present Metzias. Something pushing them to keep expanding. And not being happy. Things don't have to be where they are. They could be different. The winning the prizes for their work, it's not brains as much as it is they're trying to push the boundaries and saying maybe it could be not what we think it is. Maybe it could be beyond that. Einstein's genius was not, it was because he thought way beyond the boundaries that other people have set. That's the nature of a Yid, and it comes from the fact that we have a nekuda of infinite us. It's part of who we are. Obviously, if we use it for money, you know, that there's no limit to what I try to do or for other stuff, then it's not being used for what's right, and you know, and the chulu. But understanding what goes to the heart of that, I think that's it. And therefore, going with his mahalach, that when Paro tried to repress the Jewish nation, then you know, tried to make them not come to the world, imposing on them that type of lifestyle. It's fascinating. I always think about it, especially recently. In the 1800s, the Jew was the restless, shiftless, shifty kind of unsettled homeless being, and it was understood that that's where all Midas Ra start from, and that's why they're paying the nectar, and so on and so forth. Zionism said, you're right. If we find ourselves, our place, our Dalamis, we will become settled and rooted. We're going to become farmers, and the people are going to be as exciting as a potato farmer in Germany. Nothing, they're just going to sit and kind of just keep growing potatoes, and that's it. That was the thinking of the Zionists. That is, so we have our country, we're there, and there's still an extraordinary restless people. There are close to a million Israelis living overseas. There are wherever you hear in the most farukta place when a plane crashes on the way from who knows where to who knows where, there's always, are there any Israelis on board? I mean, what are the percentage, if it be a normal nation, what are the percentage there would be an Israeli on board on a flight between Cambodia and Vietnam? There's either one or someone just missed his plane. The Israeli newspapers always have some guy that Mamashi was supposed to take that flight. Where? Why? And the answer is, we are restless. And unless we find where we can be Natua, you know, if we are Bechatzis, Beis Hashem Elokeinu, if we find our roots in the world of Ruchnius, that's where we become restless in that world. But the tchuna of restlessness and thinking differently and trying to see it in a very different way is part of Klausel's Metzius. And that's why the Bnei was something which gives a person, it's to remake the Klausel into a Mesudadika Uma, an Uma that's not that. Okay, we'll hold it here by a piece of Mr. Ramses. Any questions, any points?
Did Eve's position that he said when Pare consulted with him, does that connect to some of the things he says in, say, for Eve? Like, I think the Malbim has a Mahalach that he held that things, people just had a fate that went a certain way and there was nothing they could do about it.
I don't know. You know. I have no idea. I don't have more. You know, other than this Chazal, no one else mentions that. So it's hard to say to you know. To make, I mean, you could connect it. You must say there's not much else to go on. I don't know. So okay.
So what are the Shvatim? Let's take Zvulun. What are these supposed to do with the restless Nekuda inside of him?
So. Building again, even in Gashmias, a person can, restlessness is good. Technology, you know, the mentality that everything is good, we need something new, would have robbed us of a lot of technology. But the person needs to understand, what am I doing with this? You know, is this a place that I should? If when we say that something has an unlimited stream, let's say you have a source of energy that's not limited, but what do you harness it to? Are you going to harness it to nonsense? Or are you going to harness it to something useful, worthwhile? You know, developing something. It's a correct, but. Even in material things, there's a ruchnius, there's a gashmius. A person puts his energy into, you know, this whole healthcare system is very difficult. It's giving people not fantastic care for phenomenal price, inaccessible. How to redo it in a way that people can get the care they need when they need, and so on. That would take an extraordinary initiative to get it done. V'chein hala. You know, as long as the person understands what he's doing it for. On the other hand, this other person just wants to own more companies. It's not, you know, so he's taking that restlessness and he's just unhappy and unsatisfied, just wants more companies and more things and no real sense of what, and Jews are very, it's a Jewish trait. and whether it's Ra or Tov depends on what you do with it.
Ein oid Baruch Chaim.
You're always looking for a business angle. That's,
no, but my question is, there's no good when a person tries to, I know you're writing about it in Baruch Chaim, but the people who are trying to make a lot of money, and we see them all around, especially I live in New York, but they give a lot of tzedakah. There's no mile to that.
The person's matur is that. So, what's the person's agenda? So a person says, you know, it's natural. There's a natural development of business, which is natural. A person who's in business is developing it. And if a person develops business well, it does better, brings in more income, and so on. But is the person trying to develop something, or is the person just eager to have more toys? It's like, let's give a mashal. When you have a doctor, so he has tools that he needs, and he has a lot of tools that he needs, or unless you have a very good carpenter or something, he has a lot of tools, and having more tools, this will help me, I'll be able to do this more efficient, that more efficient. You have sometimes a kid who's playing carpenter doctor, and he just wants more things on the wall because he needs more schmances on the wall. It's a difference whether or not the person has a focus, and he asks himself, yes, I have unlimited energy, but unlimited energy needs to be used for a specific purpose. Where am I taking it to? You know, what's the focus of it? You know, you'll find people who work with people. You know, some of the people who work with the very troubled kids now, and 24/7 for most of their lives, they're there. So it takes a certain type of unlimited energy for that, but you're using it, and you make a tachas out of it. So something building the business is developing a business is a positive thing, but the person needs to say yourself, where am I focusing my so if I do have much bracha, what do I do with it? What am I supposed to do with all that bracha? Where am I supposed to funnel it to? Those are the questions the person asks himself.
I always wondered if the Isser of Ribbis is because the person is just using potential to get more potential, but there's no direction to it.
It's a very interesting, it's something that I wondered about a lot, because it's really counterintuitive. If I have $1,000 and I buy a tractor with it and I rent you the tractor, there's no problem whatsoever. But if I take the $1,000 and rent the $1,000 to you, I'm over a chamus. Why? I mean, and that's why Rishayim explained. That's why it's perfectly legitimate to lend to a guy with ribbis. What's wrong with it? It's not even a rental. But what you're saying is a good point. Yes, very good point. Good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have a loan to Meshulam.
I have a what?
You have a loan by any chance?
No.
Okay.
You remember 47th Street's photo?
Yeah.
He you know, he always hired the younger light after they came out of Kyle.
Right.
One day he stopped, he said, I don't hire, you know, only Puerto Ricans. The Puerto Ricans, they work very nicely. Younger light, he's there, comes after 2 weeks, he comes with a pen and a pair, he starts taking down the numbers on the boxes. 6 weeks later, he's out, he opened up just went out of business, but
I say, you know, it's a tchunas on nefesh. Reb Noach always said over. Reb Noach has a great story. He asks, you know, he used to give this shear for people coming off the street. So he said, they asked him, how can you tell the difference between a goy and a Jew? They all walk in, they all look. He says two ways. First of all, the goyim agreed everything he says. The Jews argue with everything he says. That's one siman of Milsa. He says another siman. He said, a guy walks in, big, tall Swede. Son, where are you coming from? Oh, I found this fantastic beach near Eilat. It's just sun and sea and sand. It's paradise. How long were you there? 3 weeks. Why'd you leave? Ran out of money. A Jewish guy comes in, bouncing in. Hi, where you come from? Oh, this fantastic beach, man, a lot. It's just sun, sea, and sand. It's paradise. How long were you there? A day and a half. Why'd you leave? Got bored. It's a tchuna, and it's a positive tchuna, basha husham. the question is always, where do you go with a tchuna? That's really where the question is always. Okay. Shabbos.
Good Chodesh.
Yeah, Good Chodesh.
Chodesh, Shabbos.
Shabbos, Chodesh.